After hundreds of refugees drowned in October trying to reach Italy, that country developed a program to rescue them at sea. But as refugee expert Bill Frelick writes in an op-ed in the LA Times, that led to an eightfold increase in migrants trying to reach Italy. Here in the U.S., a 2008 law giving children from non-contiguous countries full hearings led to that fierce debate about whether that law prompted the kids to come. Bill says they're also fleeing violence, if not war. But more to the point of his piece, 57 or so thousand children, that's nothing. The Atlantic magazine concurs. They point out that Jordan has taken in 600,000 Syrians, 29,000 Iraqis, and more refugees. In the U.S., it would be the equivalent of all of Canada moving in. And Bill Frelick asks, why aren't richer places like the U.S., the EU, as welcoming? He's director of the refugee program at Human Rights Watch. He joins us now. And Bill, I quoted The Atlantic. You have another comparison?
Yeah, Lebanon, a country about the size of Connecticut, has seen the influx of 1 million refugees from Syria. This would be the equivalent of 73 million coming into the United States. That, I think, does put into perspective the 57,000 children that we're dealing with. It's not to minimize that number. It's not to say that it's insignificant. But Lebanon is seeing 20 times that number, and it's a much smaller country with much less capacity to handle that influx, both quantitatively but also qualitatively. The pressures on Lebanon, the demographic balance of the country is very delicate, and it poses really, I think, much more of an existential threat there, whereas here for the United States, it's a difficulty, it's a problem, but it's a manageable problem.
Your larger premise is, why isn't the U.S. and why isn't Europe more welcoming? Well, couldn't you turn and look at Jordan and Lebanon and see what's happened to these countries that have taken in so many refugees from war and say, that's one answer? It becomes overwhelming.
Well, there are large numbers of refugees that tend to be in the areas where you have conflict, as you have in South Sudan, as you have in the Central African Republic, you have in Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia. And in fact, the neighboring countries have very little choice in the matter. They have masses of people that cross their borders. In some ways, the United States, Europe are relatively lucky, having the luxury of having oceans on either side and having these kinds of barriers, and also simply not being contiguous with countries right. that are producing those kinds of refugee numbers. These are not choices. It's not a choice, particularly thinking of Jordan. I mean, going back to the Palestinians from 65-plus years ago, the Iraqis that everyone remembers, now Syrians, and who knows, we'll probably have another wave of Iraqis coming in soon. Jordan didn't choose any of that. But there are obligations that Jordan faces, as does the United States, not to send people back to persecution. You do need to have a protection regime that is able to protect those who need protection, and that's what we're talking about here.
Well, you seem to be saying, too, that Italy and the U.S. have another benefit, if you can put it that way, in that there might be a solution at the source. In other words, if you can improve human rights conditions in the countries of origin, you could potentially fix this problem, whereas some of these crises in these countries like Syria seem just so intractable. But you also say that in the short term, both the U.S. and the EU have another possibility, which is sharing some of the burden.
Yeah, and burden sharing is one of the basic concepts of what's called the international refugee regime, which basically says that just because a country happens to be on the border, happens to be the place where refugees are pouring in, doesn't mean that that country should, or that state, in the case of the United States, should bear the burden. So there are 27 members of the European Union in addition to Italy, and Italy should be getting the support from those other EU members. But the way they've set up their system basically means that the country of first arrival is the country that's responsible for dealing with those asylum seekers. And that's on its face just unfair to those countries like Malta and Italy and Bulgaria and Greece that tend to see the first place where refugees, asylum seekers are crossing in. And by the same token, there's no reason that Texas should bear the brunt of an influx that comes across the Rio Grande River. You do have the capacity to relieve that burden.
Well, but the governor here in Massachusetts has offered two places for shelter for up to 3 months, and people have been protesting at those places.
Yeah, and that's really unfortunate. I think it's a very short-sighted thing, particularly when you look at the way that the shelter system is set up in the United States, which I believe the last statistics that I saw showed that about 85% of the children who have gone through the placement process have actually been placed with their parents here in this country and other close relatives. So the sheltering here is actually, for the most part, a very temporary setup.
Your biggest point seems to be that the industrialized countries, or as it's put in the headline, rich countries, don't bear nearly the refugee burden of Kenya, Jordan, Thailand, other countries. We mentioned Lebanon as well. And what, there's some responsibility on the part of the rich countries to set a better example?
Well, one is just not to bellyache so much, I suppose. when you look at this, if you really do look at it globally, as I've had if you call it a privilege to do the kind of work that I work, I've been in all of the countries you mentioned to see the situation firsthand that they face, just to give you an example. Recently, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, the UN Refugee Agency, put out an appeal just a couple of days ago for 300,000. Refugees from the Central African Republic. It was an appeal for only $210 million. When you think of the request that President Obama made for $3.7 billion for 57,000 kids, and you compare that to $210 million for more than 300,000 refugees that have poured into Chad, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and then you realize that appeal for very basic life-sustaining assistance is only 31% funded. You see in place after place in South Sudan, in really dreadful pockets, the problems that are being faced with the more than 500,000 Somali refugees living in the Dadaab camps and in Kenya, the basic resources to sustain these people is really under enormous strain.
You say the real burden on the U.S. and Italy is to show that even large numbers of migrants and asylum seekers, and as you well know, people would also say the phrase should be illegal immigrants, can be treated fairly and efficiently without sacrificing basic due process.
Yes, that's exactly the point. And I think that we have a backlog at the immigration court. So, you know, what we do need are more judges that actually can make considered determinations to see, is this person someone who needs international protection? Is this someone who we have obligations not to send back to a place where their life would be put in danger, and in which case we need to protect them? And those people who don't meet the standard can be returned.
Bill Frelick, the director of the Refugee Program for Human Rights Watch. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.